My guest this time is Christopher C. Horner, senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He also served on the Trump transition landing team at the Environmental Protection Agency. He joins me now to discuss the back and forth in recent days about whether President Trump was rethinking his decision to withdraw the United States from the non-binding Paris Climate Accords. The administration says there has been no change in policy since Trump announced the U.S. will withdraw. But there may be a bit more to the story here. And Chris, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Greg.
The quote that got folks confused over the weekend and originally published by the Wall Street Journal came from a guy who's the European Commissioner for Climate Action and Energy. And his quote is, "The U.S. has stated that they will not renegotiate the Paris Accord, but they will try to review the terms on which they could be engaged under this agreement." So is he just restating the existing policy in a slightly confusing way, or is the Trump administration reevaluating its position here?
Well, a third option is that although the chair of the National Economic Council, Gary Cohn, said that the position was unambiguous, he stated it unambiguously, the position itself is inherently ambiguous. And that is what President Trump announced on June 1st in the Rose Garden was that he was going to withdraw in November of 2019, taking effect the year after that, unless he found better terms. Now, they have yet to define what those better terms are. If you've read the agreement, if you know what the point is, if you know it automatically, you have to tighten it every 5 years, that already, as you and I speak, lawyers have filed pleadings with the court to demand the courts now take this over and recognize and enforce the Paris Treaty against us plus some, then you recognize that there is no such thing as pro-American terms, as the White House spokesman put it when the story broke. But it's ambiguous. We're getting out unless you can tempt me to stay in. So that's a long way of saying the struggle that led up to the June 1st announcement and was particularly acute in May among administration staff, not just Obama administration holdovers, not just career resistance types at the State Department, but some Trump appointees in the White House, in National Security Council and elsewhere, who are fighting to reverse this. As you know, other very close Trump administration advisors also support not following through on this promise. So it's possible the European, that's a strange new title, by the way, Minister for Climate Action and Energy, which is like Minister for Being Skinny and Fat. it doesn't make any sense. I mean, you either ration energy or you provide it or allow for it, is saying that, well, they've reversed their position and they're not going to withdraw. That would be a big deal. That's the struggle, but it has certainly not been announced, and the White House denies it's been arrived upon. The struggle continues until President Trump sends that letter in November, on November 5th, 2019. This fight goes on.
Chris, as you have mentioned to me, I believe, on the air and also off the air, there's a number of ways the president could handle this. He's choosing the executive route, which takes over 2 years to even submit our intention to withdraw and then another year to get out. Why doesn't he just kick it over to the Senate and have them kill it?
If he wants a durable withdrawal, meaning something that President Warren cannot turn the key on January 20th, 2021, you're going to have the Senate vote. Or there's another plan B, which is there's a mother treaty that there's a history here, and it began in 1992. We ratified a non-binding treaty. See, treaties don't have to be binding to be ratified. That's some of the word play that's going on here. We ratified a non-binding treaty on the promise that it would never require targets and timetables. And in fact, the legislative history of that framework convention treaty, the Rio Treaty, said if you ever attempt to impose targets and timetables, this is in the report approved by the Senate, okay, unanimously, it has to come before the Senate. Well, President Obama said, I dare you. And he purported to commit the United States to the Paris Treaty, which has targets and timetables of energy rationing to be tightened every 5 years. And so far, the Senate has not stirred. In fact, to my understanding, the Senate has told President Trump they don't want him to involve them. Don't make me do my job. So he could just say, you know what, upon further reconsideration, this is a treaty, and I'm therefore sending it to the Senate. He could, if the Europeans agree to renegotiate it, send any renegotiation up to the Senate, and that would be crazy like a fox, because there's no point There are no good terms under this agreement, but if it's a way to say thank you and now over to the Senate, like every other country, to ratify it. Or third, he could say, I changed the number and this is a different agreement, and so it's going to the Senate. That's really the only way you're going to get this thing to last beyond his presidency, this withdrawal, because this is a very, very well-funded Frankenstein we've created and built up over the years. It will, or you know, it will sleep in a cask of its native soil until he leaves office, and then boom, you watch, it will pop up and roam the earth. So you can withdraw from the framework treaty, saying, "Look, you've abandoned everything we agreed to in 1992, and we have a process for this. So we're out of here. The conditions have been violated. We're gone." Or he can send it to the Senate. But one way or the other, this is going to require something more than the letter. If you want it to last, and you should want it to last, this is killing people in Europe. This is a terrible agenda, and I want you to know that in litigation, we have obtained records from the State Department, a cable, saying that Germans are worried that if the rest of the world doesn't do this to themselves too, they will lose billions. It's in a state cable saying Russia's getting heavy with them, they might turn the gas off, and the Germans are worried if the U.S. and others don't do this to themselves too, it will cost them billions. In other words, it's not fair that we did this to ourselves. You're mean if you don't do it to yourself too. Don't do it.
Chris, you mentioned the pressure the president's getting from certain members of his staff and perhaps even his cabinet. Secretary Tillerson reportedly is not in favor of the original decision here. Given the reshuffling of the staff in recent months, does this stack the deck more against your side? And are you concerned at all that the president's actually going to make a more significant reversal here?
I am concerned, but because until you're out, you're in. And again, even then, if he just sends a letter, it could be reversed. I'm concerned because the people that are, there's very few people at home to help work this. And those who are at home, at least at the State Department, are not the people that we should want there. This is the biggest boon for the State Department possibly ever. I mean, you're talking about creation of an enormous climate diplomatic corps. They think, oddly enough, when you rob Peter to pay Paul, Paul thinks it's a great idea. So the politicals they've brought on board are not the ones you'd want if you wanted to keep the president's promise. But recently there have been efforts to staff up in the White House, too. Recognizing how bad state is, the White House has maintained control of this issue. To get around that, the Remain camp and the White House are now staffing up to overwhelm those few rational staffers who prevailed in June. So we are concerned about new staffing decisions. He was properly staffed. The White House counsel and some of Gary Cohn's own staff prevailed. They made the right arguments. EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, I'm told, was very impressive, making the legal case. And we made the right decision, if not the best way, for the right reasons. You're going to have to affect it. And bringing in people who want to undermine the president's decision is a troubling sign.
Chris, just about a minute or so left in our conversation here, and I know we've touched on this before, but I think it's good to get it back out there since we haven't touched on the issue for a couple of months here. When folks hear it's a non-binding agreement, and then we talk about the urgency and the critical importance of this decision, if it's non-binding and we don't have to abide by it, even if it is in effect, why does it matter so much that we officially get out?
For the same reasons we have gotten out of other agreements, which is it's really a starting point. The United Nations, with timing that we couldn't have orchestrated any better, the United Nations, just before the president made his announcement, issued a report about how activists could use the Paris Treaty to really put the screws to signatories who are claiming it's not binding. And they pointed to the courts, and they pointed to a decision out of The Hague that's fairly recent, in which the court said, yeah, I know you've got your agreement, and you've got a number here, and you've also got decades of saying, oh, I'm so awful, I'm so responsible, I'm so obligated. The court took over there, just as we just had lawyers file in the Ninth Circuit here demanding our courts take over, and said, this document is a starting point, not an end point. Politicians assigned a number. Me, the court, in my wisdom, we're going to assign a bigger one. So you can say not binding, but the people doing this know what they're up to, and they know who occupies our judicial benches here. And we don't need to get too specific, but just if you want, there's a case out in the Ninth Circuit where lawyers did exactly what we warned they would, and they have filed under the authorities they're arguing, that under treaties, the Paris Climate Agreement, saying the U.S. here acknowledges they have to act, and even more seriously. than they agreed in the treaty. So this is simply a beginning point for the courts. That's why that's a key reason why it's so dangerous. The other is, of course, you have outsourced policymaking to this body instead of our Senate, as our Constitution dictates. If you've gutted the treaty power probably forever if you just shrug at this usurpation of the Senate's treaty role.
We'll certainly be watching, and unfortunately, there's a long time before we might know officially what happens here. But, Chris, it's always good to have your expertise. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Greg.
Chris Horner is a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He also served on the Trump Transition Landing Team at the EPA. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.